rehearsal or anything, and it's just a jam, usually an hour. We do hour sets.
And what do you play?
If it's here at the house, he plays the piano there.
Wow.
And then he plays the chimes and he does vocal stuff.
Uh-huh.
At clubs, it's usually chimes and vocals and dance.
Great.
We met you.
When? Oh, we're at Pirate Cat Radio, where I do a show. You called. I was doing the show on Dirk Dirksen.
Oh, that's how we met. Right.
Yeah, I was doing the with Tony Duchesne. We were doing the memorial show for him. And I think you were listening. I think you were streaming through this station.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and then I got a nice email when I got back.
Yeah.
But I do a show there. I do a music show on Fridays, and then I do a... show in the mornings on Thursday and Friday mornings that I just started doing. It's like a funny morning show.
A D V I advice.
Yes, suspect advice. Yes. Yeah, we're a show that's dedicated to giving the worst advice humanly possible. So, and then we do a lot of news,
like,
you know.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Like different combinations of drugs and medicine, you know. Is it okay to take Vicodin with tequila? And of course it is. No.
Oh.
Yes.
B. Obvious.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we do... We do a lot of news. I don't know. I've been waiting to have somebody to work with for years that I could... play off of humor-wise, because I've always written a lot of humor, but it's fun to have somebody to perform stuff with, and it's just very spontaneous. You know, we play music in between, so we're not just yammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to bring real information on the show, too. Mm-hmm. We have a correspondent from Boston who's really involved in kind of greening of cities, and so he, you know, will call up and we'll talk about different, you know, different tips and things people can do, and politics, and but then we make fun of a lot of stuff too. We're very politically incorrect.
How so?
Because it's, you know, it's a pirate radio station, there's sort of no limit, so if you're kind of joking and getting out of hand, you can just keep pushing
like us.
Exactly. We were reporting on a story about a new medicine that they found helps mice become smarter, and so we were kind of laughing about, you know, why do we need smarter mice, and on and on. It just got kind of out of control and silly, but you know, there's nobody monitoring it with you know, we try to keep it, I don't know, we don't do rude stuff. We're ladies. We try not to get too gross or anything, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We're two soccer moms who've raised kids, you know, but are still naughty.
You have a F-U-N fun. L I life.
Yeah. I do have a fun life. I think it's important to have a fun life. You know, I think you just got to keep doing what you love. You know, I think if you keep doing it, eventually you'll get, I don't know, it's stuff works. Like, nothing in my life has ever made sense on paper, but it's always worked. I think if you kind of start with the inside stuff that you like, you know, follow, go with what feels fun, you know, and figure out how to feed people.
It is not L-I-N linear.
Yes, it's not linear. Enough for me.
Yeah.
I never thought I would do any of the things I'm doing now. I just always kind of hop.
That, we, us, Us too.
Yeah. You just follow along.
Yeah.
That's fun. I started doing the radio stuff as research for a book I'm working on, a novel, and but it's just taken over. Now I'm just doing radio. Now I say I'm pretending I'm working on a new book.
We S T started Lover. Yeah, I mean, it sounds so much like us because we had no intention of starting a radio station. But Frank had met this guy online who was part of a radio station. Uh-huh. This was like 8 years ago or something like that. So it was like the beginnings of that, the very beginnings of it, where it was just a bunch of like computer nerds that had figured out how to do it. Stuff. And it was called Fake Radio. Frank always said, bad name. But their whole thing was that they were about free speech. And Frank had been investigated by Jesse Helms for his art back in the early 90s.
Wow.
A lot of these people involved in that knew Frank from that and had read about him and stuff. So when this guy met Frank, he was actually reading Annie Sprinkle's book. And Annie lists Frank as one of her teachers.
Yeah.
And then he gets an email from Frank, you know, because Frank had found his site, which was Art Television, which was him and the two women that he lives with doing like erotic sexual cam stuff as like art. And
were they local or?
No, they're in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
So that's how they meet. And then he, you know, they're talking. He says, I'm part of this radio station. Frank says, I always had a fantasy about being a DJ. Oh, Frank, they'd love to have you, you know.
Yeah.
But it turned out that their idea of free speech was like you could curse.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of limits and rules.
Yeah.
And Frank's really good at honing in on them and like, you know.
Yeah, saying this isn't free.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it would be things like DJs would say, I don't think anybody's listening. If I don't get an email in 5 minutes, I'm going to stop my show.
Mm-hmm.
And so Frank on his show would read that.
Mm-hmm.
And say, first of all, I don't think it's true. And second of all, even if nobody was listening, if somebody did tune in and there's nothing there, they won't come back.
Yeah, you kind of you have a commitment to
to
being there and doing that.
Right.
Yeah, I have sometimes at our station, a DJ will call up and say, I can't get you online. I don't know if you're broadcasting. I don't know if I should come in for my show. And you're like, of course you should, you know.
Yeah.
You don't. Just because you can't get online, it means maybe there's a lot of people listening.
Right. Basically, that's basic stuff.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really tipped it was at some point the management, which was just some guys that Frank described as having a wet dream about quitting their day jobs and getting a secretary and running this fake radio. And Frank would tell him, you know, that ain't going to happen. You should just enjoy doing it.
Yes.
And so they started saying that they were going to sell out to some corporation so that they could pay the monthly bills.
Uh-huh.
And Frank said, well, how much are the monthly bills? Because there were like 20 DJs. He said, everybody chip in like a little money. They wouldn't tell us how much.
Yeah.
And we realized it's because they wanted to keep control. They didn't want everybody chipping in.
Yeah.
And so, and then everybody got like, it got heavy. Like people were saying to Frank, oh, you hippie. You don't know how life works. This is what life is like now. You have to sell out. They're calling it selling out.
Yeah.
You have to sell out to the corporations. And why don't you start your own show if you're so small? Your own station if you're so smart.
You're like, I think I will.
Well, it was like the last thing we wanted to do. We had this like Sunday night slot, and then we were doing performances, and we had a zine, and we had all this stuff going on. But one week it was just so like negative. Frank said, okay, what's involved? So Mikey spent a week. Really, there weren't any models, you know, learning how to start a radio station. You know how much their monthly costs were that they were willing to sell out for? $99.
Oh, my gosh. That's
$99
nothing.
A month.
Yeah. Yeah. At PyroCat, we all donate, you know, we pay dues, you know, like $25 each.
For
a month.
Uh-huh.
And then if we need a piece of equipment, like we wanted to, we're trying to really have a lot more interviews on the show and just kind of make it a lot more culturally relevant and politically relevant, and not so much about just playing cool music, which is always fun, but there's other stuff too. But we needed a piece of equipment so that we could get calls on the air. And so, you know, everybody, it was like $175, and everybody just kind of reached in their pocket and pulled out whatever they could do, you know, and people, if we move studios, we, you know, everybody jumps in and paints, and the guy who runs it is very very focused, and he's great at telling everybody what to do. You know, he's one of those people. He's 25 years old. You know, he's been doing this for 10 years. He's just he's fun to watch, because you never know what he's going to do next. He's a complete jerk half the time, but he's just, but he gets things done. You know, he's one of those people that does stuff. So you, I mean, I think I've just been around long enough to know that those are the people that make stuff happen. You know, that are willing to create what they want out of what they have, you know, and just say, this is
R-I, risk and willing to risk.
Yeah, risk, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people aren't. A lot of people just wait back, sit back and wait for someone to tell them, you know, what to do. So, so then you started this, the station after...
Well, so we didn't even skip a week. It was like we gave our notice. We did. It was a Sunday night show
and
like this. Would always
Pittsburgh?
Be from the house.
Oh, so you did it from here, but you patched in.
All the
there.
DJs did it from their own homes.
Oh,
that's still the
wow.
way it is. All our DJs do it from either they send us their show or put it up on the internet, or they do it from their own house if it's live. I will H I hit you up.
Oh,
before you leave to do a show on Lover. Yeah,
that would
exactly.
be fun.
So it started out, so our first show on Lover was live from Tokyo, because we had a guy that Frank met on the internet that did that, was an artist and musician, and so he did the first show on Lover. So it was his show Sundays, and then it would be followed by
That's
this show.
Great. So you have people from all over.
All over the
How
world.
How many shows do you have now on this station? Per week.
Lots. It's constant.
Wow.
You know,
That's
a lot
fantastic.
Of the times we have what we call the mix, which is coming from here. We have like 100,000 songs that just is randomized. But the programming usually starts anywhere from 1 in the afternoon to 4 or 5, and then it
That's
runs.
That's a lot of legwork, isn't it, to run all that? And do you two run all?
Well, actually, Mikey's our tech.
Okay.
He's the tech dude. But we all do, you know, parts of it. We
do
share
all
the
live
work.
Here? Is this
the three of us live here.
That's great.
Yeah, and then that is just one of the things we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we mainly do our own art, and then Lover was just like something we did so Frank could have his Sunday night show. Yeah.
Well, now what kind of stuff do you do? Performance stuff.
Stuff. Like the band is the most recent incarnation of the performance stuff, but that's varied over the years. Like there was a long period of time where we mainly did what we called ritual performances that would go from like 5 hours to 48 hours.
I bet you know Charles Gatewood, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. F R freaked out. Yeah, he freaked out at Frank, at our art.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. He's a really good friend of mine. He's like family.
Yeah. T turned. Well, he didn't turn it off, but he didn't ask them to turn it back on. He invited us to perform at one of his events.
That was what year was that? 1992, 91, 92.
Yeah, it was
93.
The early 90s.
I was there.
Oh,
I was
Frank
there.
Was scheduled
it was at
to
a
sing.
Club that was like...
And
like
we did body painting.
It had like a railing, kind of like square stage.
Yeah.
And the guy who did the carving, nailing his... Yeah.
Oh, Fakir.
Yeah. I think Fakir was there. Somebody who nailed his scrotum to a board.
Oh, I don't remember.
Maybe it was a different show.
Oh, yeah,
Charles.
Yeah.
How could you? Oh, I'm not sure which time. Yeah.
But Frank was, we did body painting. That was part of it. We were like an installation, and there were a bunch of us, and we would paint people who wanted to be painted. And then it was also, Frank was supposed to do a music set where he sang, and it was him singing along to tape music. So the sound people were playing the tape music and also working Frank's mic. And, you know, when Frank sings, it puts a lot of people through changes.
Yeah.
And so Frank started singing, and the sound guys freaked out and turned the sound off.
Oh, my God.
And so I went to, I found Charles, and I said, Charles, they turned the sound off, and he just didn't even want to talk to me.
That's funny. That, I think you might get an award for freaking out Charles Gatewood. Have you seen his work, all his photographs?
Sure,
I mean, I've never known anything to freak out Charles Gatewood. I mean, he's got pictures of people who incrementally cut off pieces of their body and their fingers, and like he's so that's good.
Something to be proud of.
I think you should be very proud.
Well, we are. We are. That
absolutely
is why, what, who? No, what? I do.
That's what I do. I
freak out the unfreakoutable.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his specialty. We did a W O R world. No, work. A workshop at a S.E. Sex Cult. You probably know them. One Taste. It's in San Francisco.
Is it a sex cult?
So Frank calls them. Do they call themselves a sex cult?
Yeah. I know they do, like, in that space, they'll do different, you know, body stuff, dance stuff.
F. Freak them out. We freak them out. They do nude and sex everything, and we freak them out.
That's great. Yeah. And what did you do there? Did you go there to perform?
We did a workshop there, an ongoing workshop.
Okay.
They were actually guests on this show, and we had just lost. We had been doing an ongoing workshop at UC Berkeley and just lost it for freaking somebody out. And we were interviewing them, and they were telling us about their space, and we told them about the workshop that we just lost, the series. And they said, oh, you can have our space after.
It's good to
I H G. Oh, he got the it was a man and a woman that came to represent them to be guests on the show. And they were dressed up like really, really, really fancy. And she had this fancy like black little dress and heels and stuff, and she had a bra on, and you could see the bra because of the cut of the dress or something. And so Frank kind of worked on her throughout the whole thing until he got her to take her bra off. And she gave it to him. We have it hanging out in his studio. Because he said it didn't. I mean, it didn't work with what she had on. It just seemed kind of weird to have that bra on. And so, And so, and then they said, you should just do it at our space. You know, they don't want to, because we had said one of the things that was great about it is there was no money involved. We didn't have to pay anybody, so everybody could just drop in. We didn't charge any money for it.
Nice.
So said that we want you to have exactly what you had there. So they set it up, and what happened was their core people were the most regular people in the workshop. Like, there would always be like different people that would come each week, but their core people were always there, and they really liked the workshop and they really got into it, and they started really looking forward to it. Intimate. They said that it created an intimacy that they wanted, not just sex. And the woman who leads it kind of got wind of it. And she showed up and was, you know, very impressed and wanted to meet with Frank. So she met with Frank and told him that he's closer to the source than they are. And she wanted to learn from him how to get closer to the source. So he said, well, you could do my apprenticeship. This is how much I charge. And she was like really insulted. And I don't know. I mean, the attorney started showing up and they wanted waivers at the door. And just, I mean, it just, they were basically getting uncomfortable with the changes that were happening in their organization. And we weren't kind of doing what we were supposed to do. Like, I guess Frank should have like treated her a certain way and let her work with him for free. And I don't know. So And then they wanted these waivers. And Frank said, I've never done waivers. I'm never going to. If you want to do it, he said, my experience is they create problems. He said, if you want to do waivers, you're welcome to it, but I'm not going to be involved in it. And so they start doing
waivers
these.
That people
so when
won't
people
be freaked
come
out.
In, they sign away. They say, I'm allowed, because we taped everything and played it on Berkeley Public Access.
Gotcha.
That was part of the deal. And that was what we described to them that Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we want. And so they knew everything, but, you know. So, and then they're having people sign waivers when they would, like, kind of go up to them as soon as they walked in the door. And then, you know, a woman freaked out. Not F-I-T-T, fitting the event. Fitting us. It didn't,
She just, it was kind of not in the right place. And
well, like the whole thing of the workshop was about trust and opening up and experiencing the oneness and, you know, being happy and getting intimate and all that stuff. And then here they are with a waiver, you know, asking, basically, you know, I don't trust you, you don't trust me, so let's get it down on paper.
In case we can't actually bridge that intimacy gap,
right. That's right,
well,
exactly.
We'll have the legal, you know, this piece of paper will take care of it.
Yeah.
I think once you bring that kind of energy into stuff, then it shifts everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and the people who want to, you know, be litigious about that stuff. If there's a problem, having signed a piece of paper is really not going to help,
right,
you know?
Exactly. And it did, and it did, Jay, you just that. It did just that.
Yeah.
So, you know, a woman, all of a sudden, you know, she's saying, I didn't realize you were videotaping, even though, you know, we told her she's videotaping, the camera's there, she signed this thing, you know. And she interrupts in the middle of the workshop. What is that? What is that?
camera? Like, so, it just showed up.
So, and then she corners us at the end of the event with the attorney. Well, it's in the middle, she comes up and she's freaked out in the middle of it.
And are people with no clothes on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't have any clothes. Everybody, it's like not everybody has no clothes on, but some people had no clothes on. It varied. And she wants to just, like, stop everything and deal with the fact that she just realized there's a camera. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know, no. Yeah, you know, we're not going to stop everything. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a at one taste.
Yeah.
Which they have nudity and sex all the time.
Yeah.
So it's not like she walked into, like, the Y. And,
yeah, so she should have known.
Yeah.
To some degree.
So we said, you know, if you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it afterwards. So she waited, and then she corners us with the attorney afterwards, and they're kind of giving us this list of what we can and can't do with the footage, which is our footage.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't agree to anything. And then we get a call from the guy, like, the next day, the guy that was our person at One Taste, who had been at all the events and was one of the people that was really liking it. Well, the attorney's been talking to us, and I see it his way. And we need the return of all of the tapes as if they were their tapes.
Yeah.
You can't play these tapes on. They just gave us a whole list of things, which, you know, Frank. And whenever this kind of thing has happened, he completely disregards it, won't go along with it, says, sue me, do whatever you want. And they never do.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of, once they and can't bully you.
And these people were aware that they were being videotaped, right? I mean, I could see... signing something saying, I know I'm being videotaped, you know, so that you know, but not the...
Yeah, they all knew.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's risky stuff. It's a question you have to ask yourself before you walk into a room with a camera and a bunch of naked people.
Right,
you know?
Right. You have to take responsibility.
You got to ask yourself that question. And also...
Especially if One Taste.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll have to go there now.
How did you S start F O following? How did you start following?
How did I start following?
You said that you just follow, and in terms of your life doesn't look like what you thought it would look like.
Trying to outrun being unhappy, I think. Trying to outrun depression and trying to find things that make me happy, you know, creatively, you know. I think I had kind of a crazy childhood and moved a lot and, you know, terrible education. And then I went to art school.
Why?
Because my parents were just kind of nuts. My dad was a plumber. So it wasn't even like we were military kids.
We would Frank move, was a military
was
kid.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, we would move like 3 miles and change schools and change people. Usually because my dad was sleeping with like the neighbor or something.
Oh.
I don't think he's going to be watching this, but he would have to say, well, yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. He takes responsibility. So we moved a lot, and I was always odd, you know. It's just sort of like you feel when you're not a part of something kind of coming up, you always feel like kind of the other. And I guess you
don't
know anything
about that.
Yeah, we've got the blonde marina girl telling you that. Yeah. So I think what felt good for me was creating things. I grew up playing guitar, you know, badly in my bedroom all the time. I would just play guitar and I would make things. And that place of creativity is always where I like to live and where I'm happy. And I've swam against that a number of times and tried to get into, you know, but it doesn't work. I mean, I kind of am who I am. So I started doing dance and then I got into this art class kind of accidentally. And it was the first thing I could do, like where I wasn't like the worst person in the class. It was like, oh, and I realized I wasn't stupid. It was an amazing revelation. And then I started doing kind of more academic classes and jumped around at, you know, different schools.
What kind of art? Now, what kind of things did you see create before?
Before I painted. I used to paint. Yeah, I still do sometimes big paintings. I love to paint. And I like the physical act of painting, you know, and I don't get to do it so much. Some people don't like to have big sloppy painting oil paints in their kitchen. Like that was how I always had lived, you know. It was I have a daughter, so I kind of raised her, and it was she and I did what I wanted. And then I made the mistake of getting married to somebody who didn't like to have big sloppy oil paintings in the middle of the kitchen for 2 weeks at a time. not that it's his fault, but then I started writing, and I worked with a sculptor for years who's does public art, and I'd work in his studio helping build stuff, and had worked in sign shops. So I'd always had kind of physical jobs, and I understand like the process of making things, you know. But then I think that translates to you know, the cyber world. It's the same thing of like making, you know, doing what you're putting together a radio station, you know, putting together a radio show, writing a book, writing whatever, you know. It's like, I think if you can dissect the process without getting freaked out, you know, when you, and just do it and not get caught up in knowing how to do it. You know, I think that being able to jump into the unknown is always fun for me. Like people drive me nuts who have to know everything before they start. Yeah. You know, I teach writing now, and people always want to say, you know, that it's like they want a recipe book. And you're like, you got to do it, you know, at the end of the day.
If I H A had planned, if I had planned my it would be M much more L I M limited.
Yeah, I think so. Because then you start, when you have the plan, then you're kind of trying to fit within those parameters rather than having it open-ended.
Yes.
Yeah. I think, too, that you see, I have always seen projects as what they are. Like, I've seen, had ideas for, you know, for books. I usually don't attack a book with an idea to start with. It usually sort of grows, and I kind of follow where it's going. Mm-hmm. But this other project I'm working on now is a play, and I saw it as a musical, and it was just a complete piece of wartime fluff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's completely silly, and we did it a couple of years ago, because it was just fun, and I had been spent like 4 years back to back in a room writing books and doing book tours and all that stuff, and I just wanted to do something fun with other people. And so we did the play, and of course everyone paid way more attention to the play than, you know, books or book readings or all that stuff, you know. And so we're doing the play again, but it doesn't make any sense. But I saw it as a play. You couldn't write it as a book. It's a story about a woman whose life is being ruined by her cat, and it's, you know, this musical with like great songs, and with one of the cat is played by a guy who sings in a band that does Tom Jones songs. So he has just this like absolutely incredible voice, and it's so fun. It's fun to do something that where it makes it more funny because it's done really well. Like the performers were so good, and the songs that a friend of mine wrote are so good that you can't. It's hard to. It's not like stupid South Park, you know, stuff. Yeah. We'll see.
What you P what up P U S S pussy C
what's up pussycat?
What's up pussycat?
What's up pussycat? What's new pussycat? Yeah.
That was like a Peter Sellers movie. What's up pussycat?
That was the Tom Jones song.
Oh, yeah. That's what you're
what's
talking
new
about.
Pussycat?
Oh, what's new pussycat? Right.
Actually, when the Tom Jones band started, I was a go-go dancer for them. I decided they needed a go-go dancer. So I think it was like my 38th birthday, and we were doing the show at Slim's. And
every B A every band needs a go-go dancer.
Needs a go-go dancer.
Needs
exactly.
A go-go dancer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That.
The politics were overwhelming, though. You know, the infighting.
That is one of my R
rules.
Always has go-go dancers
you
in his band.
You gotta have the go-go dancers. Actually, what happened was the keyboardist got really upset because we had to dance in front of his keyboard, and he was like, I've spent a lot of money on these clothes, I've worked really hard, and I don't want you blocking me from the audience. And some of the dancers, you wanted to learn routines, and some of them didn't, and it was actually hilarious. The whole thing was hilarious. I love doing stuff like that. And then sort of standing back and watching the infighting.
B, obviously, he needs B, E, better, C, O, S, costumes?
Yes, he did. He needed something better. That was half the fun, was making the costumes for the go-go dancing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. It's fun to be able to say you've done, you know, that stuff. When I moved to San Francisco almost 20 years ago, it was with a man named Cork Markesky, which is how I know Charles Gatewood. Charles lived upstairs from us in Cork's house. And And I learned so much from him. He was 16 years older than me, and he had, made art all over the world, made movies. He was in this band called the 50-Foot Hose. It was just like this seminal, you know them? Like this seminal psychedelic band.
Right.
He just such an innovator and such a rule breaker. And it just, we had so much in common. And we still work together. We lived together for 6 years, and we still are very close. He's really, my daughter in here is still really close, which is nice. But I learned so much from that. But it was really nice to reach the age that he was when I met him and look back, and it was really because of his influence and in a way of like seeing it was stuff that I had already done, but it kind of gave me a bigger vision, you know, of that you can do the stuff. And it was really fun to kind of go back and sort of look at the things I've done in those 16, 17 years, you know, and kind of caught up with him. And because I used to look at his resume and you hear him talk and stuff, and it was really nice to come back and go, hey, that's kind of this, you know, pretty comparable there in its own, in a way, you know. Uh-huh. But I don't think I would have, I've never been somebody who's waiting for the rule book of how to do stuff, but sometimes you just don't know what the possibilities are or that the world is big until you start to see some other people doing stuff, and you go,
always.
Yeah. It's and people do want permission sometimes, but you know
why?
I don't know why. I don't want permission. My sense is like it's easier to get forgiveness than permission. You just do it.
If I waited for permission, you would have done nothing.
Exactly. I can be kind of harsh with people like that. I'm not, you know, very patient with the whiner, you know. Well, no one ever taught me how to do it or to access my creative side. It's like, what did you say?
Don't
don't whine.
A I don't wait.
Yeah, don't wait. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I S T A started playing piano just since we've been doing the Shaman's Den, so within the last like 8 years. Because we'd have these incredible musicians as guests.
Yeah.
And we had a piano. And so at some point, Frank said, can I play with you?
Yeah.
And so he played with the first person, and they really liked it.
Wow.
Hey. You know, so he kept trying, you know, and now he plays piano.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you're the poster boy for No Limits.
Right.
Man, the poster man.
It's in they always wanted that to make you a poster boy.
Yeah.
But I was R A radical. That did not fit the poster boy thing.
You're the radical poster boy.
In high school? Well, in high school, Frank was like, he's old enough that he was at the beginning of the whole integrating disabled kids into regular classes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was real smart.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would tell him that he had responsibility, that he was kind of setting the tone for what followed. And but they were using that to tell him to be more conservative. Like the first time is the pointer, right? That was the one thing when you wrote that piece, but you're thinking of something else maybe. I E D E Oh, he debated a guy who was a GI in Vietnam in their local newspaper. Or was it the school paper? In the school paper. And Frank was very anti-war. Mm-hmm. And this guy is in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And Frank is
debating.
And
this is in high school?
Yes.
Wow.
65.
Wow.
And he that was very controversial.
Yeah,
and
I bet.
That's one of the times when they told him. They said I was are you ruining it for all that would follow him? And he would say, well, gee, I thought the whole idea was to be to how did you put it? You had a nice way of putting it. A F full human being.
Yeah.
And a full
and whoever,
whoever
you happen
are.
To be.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There isn't, you know, okay, the people in wheelchairs have to act like this.
Right, right. Be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're giving them a bad name. Yeah. I mean, how much would you care about a bad name, I think, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously not very much.
It's like,
much.
You know, how much... Yeah. Wow. So have you always been in the wheelchair?
Yeah. He was born with cerebral palsy.
Cerebral palsy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's harsh. But, you know, it brings different stuff, you know.
No.
But you didn't get superpowers?
It is... It is my M-E-A. It's my meal. He always says it's his meal ticket.
Ah,
his, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've said stuff like when we were doing performance art a lot in the like late 70s, 80s, and meeting all these performance artists, and we would see that they were like putting a lot of effort into getting things to a place that Frank could do just by getting on stage. Mm-hmm. Like all he had to do was sit on stage.
And he instantly threw everybody.
And he was throwing everybody. And all these other people had to put all this work into trying to create that same level of edge and risk and stuff.
And built in.
Yeah, it's just built in. And then he can just go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually interesting. I could see that. Because it does, I think that if you start... you know, by unsettling them in this kind of organic way, I'm sure there are different places open up
right.
to be able to get in there, you know, that wouldn't if, somebody, because it's, I think people come to stuff with only their information and their preconceived ideas, and then, you know, when you shatter all those,
right.
then it's, that's a good starting point.
Then you can... R, really, R-E-A-N-G,
rearrange
them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's interesting. I just think I confuse people in a different way. I think people have always seen me and they see one... They have certain expectations based on how I look, and then when I don't fit into there, it really throws them, especially, you know, in the dating a long time ago, you know, you know, you get the guy that would want to make me into the nice Dallas. I had a guy actually tell me that I looked like a Dallas socialite.
Ooh.
You know, like with my hair like pushed against the pillows or something, you know, and it was like, oh, you'd look so good with your hair up just like a Dallas. It was just like, oh man.
And
but it's sort of this thing to kind of like push, you know.
Now that is C R I. Crippled.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. I think everybody has their thing to break out of, you know, in their own way.
You can you use
I can use that. Good.
Right. You can use the way you look like to people.
Yeah.
Which you probably do.
I think it's probably worked as much to my advantage as disadvantage. I think it's been my meal ticket, too, in its way. You know, in its...
Exactly.
Yeah. And it is sort of fun to confuse them, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was dancing at a club with a bunch of... It was a carnival fundraiser thing, and there was... I've studied Brazilian dance for years, and I just love it. And it was really, I was one of the only white people there, and this other white guy came up to me, and it was really satisfying, because he was like, okay, he's like, I don't mean to be insulting, but you kind of look like you're from the marina. You could be like a newscaster. He's like, but you don't dance like that. He's like, where did you get that from? And it was nice. And it's like, oh, good.
Thank you.
I dance like I'm brown. Yay.
H E Hey. Our audience. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, for the Berkeley Public Access, which is what people will be watching this on. Whenever we go out someplace, people always say they're watching Frank on television. It's almost always black people. So realize we seem to have a big black audience. Yeah, and it's usually like these really hip, groovy black guys. Yeah. Frank Moore!
Oh, love it!
And they just wanted to like, be all over them and stuff.
So is this going live now? Is this out?
This is live on the internet now. As streaming video.
And then it'll broadcast on the...
And then we'll produce it onto a tape, DVD, and then it goes to them. We have a number of series on that.
It's so inspiring to see you guys.
I am the most on BTV right now. Literally, there are nights when Frank's shows are 6 hours straight.
You just picture the guys sitting there with their bongs.
Well, what we've heard like at clubs like John the Baker at Burnt Rama, which is this kind of punk club, underground punk club in Richmond, he would say all the punks watch you, Frank. And I think like when people come home from the bar, because we play all night every night, seven nights a week, we're the all night programming.
Oh my God!
So this show
that's Berkeley Cable Access.
Yeah, you can watch it online too.
Can it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you live in Berkeley, you can watch it on TV.
Oh, I'm going to let my Berkeley friends
But like this show will play on Frank Moore's Unlimited Possibilities. And so on cable, they play it 3 times a week. So each episode will play like Monday, Thursday, and Saturday. And but then Frank had this idea because we're usually up all night. And so there's like, you know, from like 1 a.m. to 6 a.m., there'd be nothing on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And when do you sleep in the day?
Yeah.
Day sleepers?
Yeah. Yeah, it is A C R I. It's a crime. Frank said it's a crime that you have all this airtime that people, anybody who lives in Berkeley, can put stuff on there. There's no like rules.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You just have to like, you know, give it to them in the format they want, you know, and put the color bars at the beginning, and that's pretty much it. There's no censorship or anything.
Well, but people don't take advantage of that.
No, so there's nothing on all from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. So Frank said, how about you rerun? Because we had like 200 of these shows, and they're 2.5 hours. This show is 2.5 hours. He says, how about you just repeat it and play a different episode every night? And they went for that. So like from 1 a.m. to like 3 or
it's
4.
It's all Frank Moore all the time.
So people come home from the bars, and they turn it, and they figure Frank's always going to have something, you know, interesting at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. And do you have guests on
every Sunday night we do it here. Yeah. We have bands.
It's funny, you have to always keep stirring. I always am like always looking for guests from my shows. So it's it's fun. It's really, it gives you a great chance to walk into some place and go, come on.
Yeah.
I had a guy, Blag Dahlia from the Dwarves. Do you know the Dwarves? They're this like great punk band. They're just loud as hell and good. They've been doing it for like 20 years. They're playing tonight at Bottom of the Hill. But he came onto my show and just brought his acoustic guitar. And it was so much fun. It was just a blast, you know, and it was just, it was nice to get to do that. It kind of is like a nice thing to leap over, you know, so you like have a reason to start something.
Right.
But you got to create those things, like creating this.
It is a G great C Colin. That's what Frank always says. It's a great Colin. Because if you just invited this guy to come over and hang out with you and play music, it would probably be less likely. But if you say you're going to be on the radio,
when really what you're doing is sitting there playing music and having fun and enjoying spending time with somebody who you think is interesting.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's like it's the oldest thing in the book. It's like why young boys start bands
to get the girl.
<Meet chicks. laughs> I just do it to meet the aging rock stars.
Exactly. And we have all kinds. We have all kinds of things. So we'll have like bands. We'll have, you know, poets. We'll have politicians, so city council members and people running for public office.
Wow.
It's always something different. And then we have bands that when they tour, they schedule being on the show.
Nice.
So we get to meet people that are coming from other places.
It's nice to make that in your, you know, in your home in where your, you get to, you know, where the stuff comes to you instead of having to go.
It always blows
wait
our
for
mind.
Someone to entertain you.
Yeah. I said to Frank, do you think we'll ever go to a show again? Because we have these great bands that perform here.
That's kind of how I
here.
Feel, because a lot of the people I'll book that are coming through, they'll just sit there across this table and play for me. And it's amazing.
It's amazing.
I feel so spoiled. I'm like, get back on the mic, I'm like, you guys should really just, that was amazing. You should be so lucky.
W-H-O, whole bands. Yeah, so we'll fit an entire band in here.
That's great.
B.
So you probably have people contact you too, saying we're coming through and
the touring stuff. That's how that usually happens.
Yeah.
They'll email Frank, but I have to always. You're always. Yeah, what will happen is it will seem like we're booked for months and months in advance.
Yeah.
And then at some point I'll say, oh, look, there's only like two more Shaman's Den scheduled. And then Frank just like, boom, next thing you know, there's like 10 more. He'll get out there and he'll just start asking people. And,
that's fun. That's nice.
So it is, you're always working.
Yeah, it's always sort of like stirring the pot while you're doing this thing here, you know.
Yes.
It's good, though. It makes it... You know, the thing, my boyfriend is he's a UI designer for Adobe Design. He's just designed this program called Lightroom that's just launched, and it's for basically for professional photographers. It's with he works with the people who do Photoshop, and but it's designed for photographers to deal with their content. They can adjust photos, and it's just eight filing cabinets for photographers. But he's, you know, his relationship to work is just you, and I guess all computer people, which I didn't really know, it's just like you just blaze through constantly. Like you just don't really take breaks. You don't. It's this kind of funny lifestyle, but in a lot of ways, it really matches like a writer's lifestyle or an artist lifestyle, where you're geared around the work, and you sort of lose track. Like it's Saturday night, but you know I'm writing, I'm working, you know, and it's nice. It's nice to have that, you know, because he gets it when I'm, you know, when I'm working, my stuff.
Could.
I keep thinking he's going to ask me to take my bra off now. But I'm not wearing one.
Oh, there you go. You came prepared.
I came prepared. I'm really glad I dressed for the occasion.
Giving him ideas now. We could. H O O hook your M I mic to your necklace. if you want to take your shirt off.
Nah, it's okay. Have you intimacy issues?
like what?
Oh, I'm joking, actually. Yeah, I only like to be intimate with people who I'm intimate with.
W E. Well, how do you get intimate with them?
Sometimes it's a slow dance. It's a slower dance than it used to be. I think I used to jump into things in a more kind of a way, and then I think over time I'm a little more cautious, you know? Yeah. Yeah, it's who knew? It depends on different levels of stuff. I mean, I love getting to know people. But it's weird. I'm more protective as I get older. I didn't used to be. But I think it's partly because I have such interesting friends and experiences. I don't know. I kind of create my own world, so I'm not looking for people to entertain me so much. I don't know. I don't know how you get intimate with people. How do you get intimate with people? I figured it out.
Another interviewer, like this.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I think that's it.
S. So, what D E G degree of intimacy do you R E Q require to take your shirt off?
Either really blistering desert heat, it would be intimacy
H.
enough, or
turn the heat up. Shut the windows. Turn the heat up. H. How hot? A.
Not till it's 120 R, in here.
A R D. No. How? No. H. O. W, A, Howard Stern, E, A, eat your heart out.
Yeah. That's it.
Where? Was it where? B, A, back to... What I was G going to say,
mm-hmm.
to ask. Could you be O book? A. R. A ramen. Oh, so the other show that we have, one of the other shows we have on BTV is Going Deep to the Core at Ramen with Frank Moore. So it's this club we were telling about, Burnt Ramen, because John was saying so many people watched it.
Oh, this is the punk show, the
yeah,
Burnt Ramen.
The punk, yeah, right.
Ah.
So it got started because he was saying... This is an illegal club. It's always been illegal, but it's been very popular. And so from time to time, he'd
like
have to shut down.
Right.
Exactly. From time to time, he'd have to shut it down if his relationship with the cops went sour for whatever reason, or there were new cops. So this was a phase when it was shut down. And so he was kind of looking for what he could do with the space. And he remembered that everybody mm-hmm. that comes there wants to be on TV and watches the show. So he said, what about you do a series and we tape it here at Ramen and we do it like once a month. You'd book, you know, you'd book like 3-4 bands mm. and make a series out of it for BTV. So we started that like in August or something.
Oh, great.
So it's once a month. The deal is either Frank will book it or we'll get a guest booker.
Uh-huh.
But the deal is each band plays a half hour and then Frank interviews them for about a half hour. So each band has like an hour episode.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end.
And so you do that. So you'll do like four at once.
Right.
Oh, okay.
But the last hour of the evening is always Frank's band, which is basically all the bands. Part of the gig is the bands have to agree to be in the jam at the end of the night. And, so I guess Frank's asking
if I would want to book.
Yeah. And then the other thing, I don't know if you want to say more about the jam at this point. The jam, L, because of what happened last time. Right.
what happened last time?
Well, I mean, it's not like we hide this or anything, because most people know something about Frank's work, or else they've been to the website or whatever. And so, you know, Frank's work has always included nudity and eroticism, always, 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 and still does. So the jams usually, except when you're sick, have Frank naked and me and Erica naked. And Erica and I are like the go-go dancers. We're the dancers and we do vocals and Erica plays the clarinet. And then Frank and Erica and I dance. And it's all very erotic and explicit and S-L-I-D-E. Slide, and then we have slides of like the past 40 years of our work that are projected on the nude body. So the lights are out except for two strobe lights. It's all very like cheap tech stuff, but it looks incredible.
Yeah.
So you have just these strobe lights, and then these slides projected on Frank, and then when Erica and I are with Frank, and it's just like incredible visually.
Wow.
And we're all just kind of squirming around on each other, and it's all juicy and fun and stuff. And it's the vocals are nonverbal, so it's just like sounds and stuff. And so,
that's going on with the guests.
So that's
jam
the jam.
Band.
And so we're the only ones that ever take our clothes off, you know. But except for Bob Madigan. I don't know if you know the band Fluff Girl. They play in San Francisco, and he's the lead singer. And we've been kind of hooked with him for a bunch of years since he was a guest on this show. And he always takes his clothes off. Always takes his clothes off.
There's one in every crowd, you know.
But we get along real well with Bob. And so this has never been a problem. And we've been doing this for, this particular thing for probably 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And but the last show we did, we had a guest booker. And he knew everything. He said he spent 8 hours on our website. I don't know what he told the bands, but he told them there was a jam involved. But when Frank was interviewing the one band, he said, have you checked out the website? Do you know what you're getting into with this jam? No. He said, well, let me give you a hint. I'm going to wear my clothes this week because I've been sick. In other words, I normally don't, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to kind of get that. And then
what band was this?
Dead End Darlings.
Okay.
And then as we're really getting ready to go, they said our drummer has to leave because they, you know, they knew that this was part of the gig.
Yeah.
Because he's in high school. And he has to go to school tomorrow because it's the last Thursday of the month.
Mm-hmm.
We said, oh. Okay, well, yeah, you know, he should just go. And so at that point, Frank said, is everybody over age here? Is everybody over 18? And they said yes. So then again, you know, that didn't tell him anything. Age, N, O, not, N-O-T, notice, the, D, O, O, door was P O P E Pope.
Open.
Open. At that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the deal with Ramen, and we tell everybody this, the doors get locked at 7:30 when we start the taping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a really bad neighborhood, which is the main reason, you know. But also it's a TV taping, you know, so you lock the doors. And so everybody knows the doors are locked. But at the beginning, the doors are open. And in between bands, the doors are open. Because people can, you know, step outside, smoke, or do whatever they want. And so the doors open at this point. The kid leaves. And Frank's asking if everybody's overage and all that stuff. Then the jam begins. And apparently, some percentage of the band. I only saw the one guy that was really into it. But I'm like, you know, I was involved in the show. But Mikey was saying there were a couple of them that were like... standing there like really judgmental and
watching
unapproving.
What you guys
they're
doing.
Supposed to be in the band playing, but they're just glaring at us unapprovingly. And at some point they just pack up their stuff. Again, I didn't notice any of it, but they pack up their stuff and they go to leave and they open up the door and John, whose space it is, gave him a hard time. He said, "You committed to be here. You know, you're putting everybody at risk. This is a bad neighborhood. They're up there naked on the stage. You're opening the door wide up. You're leaving. You didn't tell anybody you're leaving. You're committed to be here."
Yeah.
He's giving them a hard time. But they leave. You know, he didn't like stop them from leaving.
Yeah.
He just gave them a hard time. And then we get an email from Lenny, the guest booker, like the next day. Kind of freaked out that the Dead End Darlings are freaking out. They were mortified at being part of our jam. And they want to be excised from everything. They don't want to be associated with us. They want to be edited out of everything.
And was it the nudity that just freaked them out? Or was it just like a...
Well, they don't really say. They never said that.
Yeah.
They never specifically said that. They just said they were mortified by it. Which, but Frank was sick at the time, so we didn't actually get to write Lenny back. This is all by email.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a letter in the mail with no return address and unsigned by the parent of the minor. The minor is the one that left. He wasn't there. And speaking for the whole band and saying, it was terrible. You know, you misled them. You made them think that they were coming for a TV taping as if like they weren't, you know. Unless they could just not imagine that would be on TV. I mean, who knows?
Might be it.
Who knows? But, you know, basically, you cannot use anything they did. You cannot use their interview. And I'm going to aggressively pursue this with the mayor and the city council if you don't. And the Richmond police if you don't honor my request.
Wow.
With no, like, you know, way of contacting them back or anything.
Wow.
And, you know, as we said with One Taste, normally in those things we just go, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And we just do whatever we want to do because, like, we don't have anything for somebody to take.
Well, and what would they bring? What are you doing that's illegal?
We're not doing anything that's illegal except that Ramen. But even in that case, what we're doing at Ramen isn't illegal.
Yeah.
But John is very sensitive about not drawing attention to Ramen about like with cops and stuff.
Yeah.
Because he's always hoping down the road he'll be able to run it as a club. And it's usually because he buddies up with the cops and they'll say, okay, if you keep people off the sidewalk and if that, you know.
Yeah.
So this was the only time we've ever said okay and we're not playing their stuff. And it was just because of John, you know.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like he was just way too vulnerable to have the Richmond cops banging on the door.
Yeah, and maybe one of their daddies was involved in, the mayor or something, yeah.
Yeah, T.
And this A. series shows at night. Okay.
C. They're from Tracy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows
those
like
crazy Berkeley people.
Yeah, that show starts, the earliest time slot is 10 p.m.
Yeah. Well, people need to do their research, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We felt it was their responsibility.
I would also say it's the parents' responsibility. I mean, as a parent, I wouldn't, you know.
Why? That was what I told them.
Yeah.
During the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, you didn't check any of it out. You said yes to a jam and you didn't check any of it out.
Yeah.
You didn't check out what this series is about. I, C, H, check everything out.
Yeah.
Their site, Frank knew everything about them.
Yeah. Well, and even as a parent, if my kid was underage and going touring, doing this kind of stuff, I would check out what they were doing. And then rather than get mad at somebody for doing something that, you know, that I didn't approve of with my kid, it's like, you know, figure out you need to.
And most of them were not. Most of them were in their 20s.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like they were like, you know, 18 or even, you know.
Well, it probably just, but it, congratulations again. You just blew your minds. You know, I
they ain't going to forget about it soon.
It's really fun to have that. Like, as you get older, it's harder and harder to have your mind blown, you know, or to like have run across something where you just go, wow, I've never, you know, I've never seen that, or I've never felt that, or I've never, it's such a delight. I mean, they're lucky that they could feel that kind of stuff. We'll miss it someday. Someday when they're old and jaded.
I'm saying, because we're deleting all their stuff. And I said, these guys had an opportunity to be associated with this like whole event that's going on, which is really a really neat thing. And it's all archived and everything.
Yeah.
And now they're just like, delete.
Yeah.
They never happened.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, they get what they deserve.
Would you do with them if they were on in your CREA creative WR writing class?
What would I do with them if they didn't? Well, I always tell people to that they really have to be brave, otherwise they shouldn't do it. You know, if you're gonna make art, make art, and don't worry about what. That's what I do. Yeah, you can't worry about how people are gonna receive what you're doing, you know. Otherwise you should just go get a job. Or somebody pays you to do what
and
they want.
You need E X P E R I experiences. You need experiences.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. A friend of mine would always say, you'll either have a good time or a good story.
That they don't understand. Use that. They don't use that. These the dead end darlings. They get the good time or a good story.
Yeah. It's always, I mean, some of the worst goofy, like if I was in an experience like that, even if I wasn't all down with the naked dancing stuff, whatever, I would come away, you know, delighted that I got to have something that blew my mind. I went one time to get this psychic reading and the woman was also a masseuse and I didn't know this, and I got there and I walk into the room and she says, "Well, take off your clothes." And I was like, okay. And I caught on to what was happening and I just kind of steered into the skid, but it was kind of I came out of there and it was like, oh, that wasn't what I expected at all, but it was really nice.
H E hey, did
I guess when I tell people I'm doing a radio show, I
am did I M E N mention I was a S H shaman. Did he mention that he's a shaman?
No,
too?
But I said it's a shaman's den. So right. What does that mean that you're a shaman?
Well, let's see. Well, you define shamanism as the direct experience of life. That's the way, like when someone's asked Frank what shamanism is, that's, and then my experience of Frank as a shaman is that that is the way he does it. You know, like being around Frank is to have your experiences be feel more direct and more like that. And so I'll like, if, you know, if I step, you know, sometimes I'll say, I feel like we live in a bubble. And he said, on purpose.
You know, I can see that. I like your bubble.
Because people come into it and it kind of, there's something very direct and clean and clear about Frank's thing with life. And so then that's kind of my experience of it too. Because we're together. And so he works with people, like he has a bunch of students, and like, you know, to be a student of Frank's is like a lifetime thing. Although he does have people that have worked with him for short periods of time too. But and so, and then what that's about is steering. I always tell him he's like an acupuncturist. He just, he doesn't like kind of what is that called? Macromanage. He's not like in there like with every little thing, but he's just like boom,
pinpoints,
boom. Like he'll say, do this, do this. Like he'll just hit the right spot.
Because he's got the pointer.
He's got the pointer.
And he'll just, here, he can put it anywhere.
And he creates, you know, he'll steer people so that their life can, like he always says, I know how life works. I don't know how people work. And so he can put people in situations where they can have like an incredible life. If they just kind of follow, you know, to, and he's following, you know, but a lot of people don't get that he's following, you know, but he's following and he'll go, right, da, 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 you know, and then when they do that, you know, so that's,
I think that's a great thing to bring to people, those moments, you know, and sort of show them, it's sort of like opening the possibilities up for them. And do people listen to you? My experience is I give people advice, they never listen. I have a theory that no one actually really wants to know.
You? And until it works.
Until it works.
Well, they listen until it works. See, we've noticed that people seem to have a hard time accepting things working. Like if they get in a position where things are really working, they get freaked out. And 9 times out of 10, that's when they'll just kind of put the brakes on. Just, you know,
it's amazing. It is fascinating. I see it in myself sometimes, you know, pulling everything together and then you just go, fuck it, you know, and it's a funny thing, but it's, I see it around me too.
Because we, they, then, they are responsible. That's what he always says.
Okay, because it's, you're responsible if you step out there and do something.
Like when everything's working, it puts you in a position of responsibility. And then, and
Rather than just being a victim of having to just deal with what's coming at you all the time.
Is that what, is that the way you would say it?
Well, it takes, you could spend your whole life just hitting the balls back, you know, that people throw at you, but
R E responsibility F freaks people out.
I guess so.
Like I remember, like some of the, like in one of the things that, like Frank's written things, you know, about that, like that each person is a point of responsibility, and when people act irresponsibly, it's like they don't quite get that what they do matters and affects everything around them.
I think it, I think it takes a long time for people, and I think it depends a lot on where they came from too, to really, you know, kind of upbringing, the, to understand that. That really what they do affects people. I mean, I've been horribly guilty of that, mostly in my love life. You know, of just like, it's almost too much to bear to know how that you can affect people. You know, but there is that, those moments where you have to really take responsibility for
this
stuff.
They give, they think, A, if, they, J, you, just, F, you, fuck, them, selves up, so it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then if they have a sense that they're actually if influencing or affecting somebody else by doing something that they're thinking is just fucked up,
mm-hmm.
that's where they don't want, people don't want to know that.
Yeah, yeah, I think it forces them to look, or forces you to look at what you're doing in a different way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or R, U, N, or run.
What's that?
Or run. So
yeah.
That's when people will run.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. M, most, run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's strange, huh? Mm. You know? I think it, yeah. You wonder what it is, the combinations of things that make people how they are, you know, and who they are, and what sort of adversity. It's always the people, I think, who've had, I don't know, you can make the choice of being responsible. I remember an exact moment when I must have been like 12, 13, 14, of realizing that things were really so fucked up that I had every right to just become a complete mess and just get in tons of trouble and all this. But I absolutely knew that there was no one there to catch me at all, and it was my life, and that if I was, you know, whatever I was doing, no one was actually even going to notice. So it was kind of, I think that was the moment of taking responsibility, because I thought, this is my life, you know, I can go and mess it all up for them to prove my point, but at the end of the day, I still have to clean up the mess, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And then I moved out like 2 years later when I was like 16. It was like, okay, I've had enough of your drama. I'm going to make my own.
K-O, koala. We have two kids, and they're in their early 30s.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So koala is, we actually had him as a guest on this show.
Koala.
That's what you're talking about.
That's
koala bear.
Ah.
That's the picture Frank painted for him when he was born, koala bear.
Is that his real name?
Yeah, koala bear Moore. And he said he hated the name until he got to the age where he cared about girls, and all the girls thought it was really cool.
Oh, that's perfect.
And then it was like, cool, Frank.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are they doing now?
Koala is recently married, and him and Nadia went to acupuncture school together.
Uh-huh.
So they just got their licenses.
Fantastic. And are they local? Right,
yeah,
there?
They live in Oakland, and he's starting his own business with a guy who's a friend
great.
Of his. And she's actually looking for a job. She was a guest on, he was a guest on the show, and Frank said, opened it by saying, this is a bunch of years ago. This is your chance to get back at us.
Yeah.
What was it like? Because he grew up in a, there were five of us that raised him. So it was like a group relationship. The adults were in a group relationship. And
with
then the two kids. Yeah. And that there were actually at points more than five, but for the most part, there were five of us. And so they had to answer to five parents, and actually more parents who at some point moved out and didn't live with them.
Uh-huh.
So this is what he's getting back at us, you know, to be two kids and five adults, you know.
So so what did they say about it?
Well, he said that there was a point in his life, like when he was about 11, 12, where he stole one of our money out of one of our wallets and blamed the black kid. The kid who was hanging out at the house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, and he would see Frank having sessions with people all the time. He grew up with people going out to the garage, which was a little studio, meeting with Frank, because he would always have students that would be meeting with him. So at that point, we said, okay, you're going to start having weekly sessions with Frank. And Frank just kind of laid it out for him about what it's like to live a responsible life. And he would use things in his life, but it started with that and then just whatever. So on the show, he said he thought that that was like a really big, a big deal for him. He said, when you first started talking to me about being responsible, that like each person is responsible for the whole life, your own life. He said, I'm not sure that I got it. Do you think I got it when you first told me? I said, yeah. He said, because I think, you know, growing up and just kind of having that as my like normal and seeing people around me that, like you said, like our president, you know,
who don't
get it, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's a great lesson.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, it's fun. Yeah, my daughter has the legacy of the four or five dads. We've had parties at her house with her friends in high school, and they're like, okay, now let me get this straight. Gary's the one with this, and then there's Pat, and then who, and then, well, how does he fit in? But it's been, you know, it's a crazy legacy to have left her with, but it didn't have any of the abuse that I was left with, you know. So I think we aim for different mistakes in our raising our children, you know. But she's so loved by all these people, you know. Yeah. At her grad, she graduates from college next in May, and so there'll be Cork will be there, and her dad, and my dad, and I think my boyfriend now, and it's, you know, and a lot of people could be really judgmental about it, you know, and I think there's times when I felt sheepish about the life I had, but I really came to a point maybe a year ago or so, because I just went through a divorce, where I just thought, you know, this is my life and I own it. And maybe it doesn't, because I had to really like face my daughter with it too and just say, you know, this is what you got. This is, you know, yes, I've had a crazy life, but, you know, and yes, you've had a crazy life, but you've been fed, you've been well educated, and you're so loved by so many people, and she's an amazing kid, incredible. And it's you just have to, I think it's that owning your stuff, you know. It's like, yeah, I know that there's always hard stuff that comes from those choices, but you know, you are who you are. And I haven't, none of the decisions I made were ever made out of malice or evil. Like, I've never, I don't think anybody makes decisions out of malice and evil necessarily. They make them out of, or I like to think, you know, they make them out of what's right at the time for, you know, for them. It's good. I was corrected though by one of my writing students when I said that once, and she said, "Oh, you are so innocent." But you know, I live in a different world, I think, in some ways, and I'm happy. I think you guys created your bubble, and in my bubble, you know, we don't play like that.
Right.
You know?
Like the D A R, the darlings.
Like the darling,
Yeah. Like would you have G gone home and told your parents all the details of, well, I mean, you're thinking of, because it was the people that were in their 20s that did it, because the younger kid was gone.
Yeah.
He wasn't there.
And they told their parents?
Apparently, because the parent knew every detail. He knew every detail. I mean, he was saying, I don't want you to use the drops that they did, because we always have bands do station IDs for us. Don't use the station IDs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they told him like that level of detail.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I think when I was in my 20s, I wasn't going home to my parents and telling them that.
No, kids these days are a little bit different, I think, though. Because they're, I don't know. There's a lot of, I was reading something, I think, in the New York Times recently about the relationship with children to their parents versus, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, my daughter tells me all kinds of stuff. She was in Copenhagen for a semester, last semester, studying like environmental, like, what was it, sort of sustainable urban planning and architecture and stuff. And they drink a lot there. Mm-hmm. And she was at, I talked to her, you know, and she had, I said, well, you know, how are you? And she's like, a black eye. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally beat up. Like she wrecked her bike, but she mm-hmm. wrecked her bike. And she told me this whole story. And I was just like, oh my God.
Oh,
you know, she's at a party. She's leaving the party with someone she's going to go home with. She's absolutely too drunk to ride her bike. And she has no idea how she got home. Or what happened to her bike.
Ooh.
She wrecked her bike. The guy left her on the street.
Oh,
like, and that later she found out that I think she was probably saying, I'm fine, you know, like trying to kind of, and then, but she, I guess she wrecked her bike like 5 times. Like just kept getting on, trying to ride and wrecking it. And I saw the picture, just like black eye and skin things.
God.
And she woke up just so hung. But I was so... I was really happy that she told me, you know, that she felt comfortable telling me, you know, and knew I wasn't going to be judgmental and mad at her, you know. It was just like, oh, poor thing, that's got to be awful, you know.
Right.
But, yeah. I wouldn't have told, I don't know, I tell my dad stuff, you know.
I guess, so in that case, though, I mean, I don't know how this really transposes, but I'm thinking in that case, you're relating to it more in terms of your relationship with her, and rather than, you know, writing a letter to the guy who left her on the street.
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of way of dealing with it.
Although if I had his address, I might have written.
Oh, really? Oh, well.
No, but that was kind of where my mind kept going, was was like, what's wrong with this guy leaving you on the street, you know? She was explaining, too, that, like, in Copenhagen, there's tremendous equality with the sexes, so there's not really, they work very hard to create that. So the idea of that sort of gentleman behavior of seeing your home, it just doesn't exist in the same way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, not that it exists that much here, but we like to, sometimes think it does.
Right.
We're feeling like we want to be a princess that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
B, A, back, to, would, could you be, book?
Oh, could book a show? I can think about that. I would probably want to, like, what kind of bands do you do?
Any kind of bands.
Any kind of bands.
Every booker books somebody else, you know. And also Frank books all different kinds of bands, too.
And then it's a TV thing, and it's in so it doesn't have to be East Bay.
It can be anybody.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like we had in January, the band came up from, was it January or February? January, Vinny came up from Los Angeles for the taping. In March, the next one is a band from Southern California.
The first band was from Australia.
Mm. Wow. Oh, the first band of the series was from Australia on tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know some of the people from the radio station. There's a couple of, you know, good local folks.
Mm-hmm.
There's this woman, Ricarda Parasol, who just is, she's had this beautiful voice. It's kind of like this PJ Harvey, Nick Cave sort of mix voice. And she writes her own, you know, all her songs, but they're very, they're kind of these American Gothic kind of stories, you know.
Oh, neat. Wow.
They really, and she's watching her perform. She's just really very good. I mean, she might be somebody I could think about. You know, what I don't want to do is probably see the whole thing.
Yeah.
See what you do and see what see if I could think of some people that kind of match. I'm sure between
the
other people could do it.
You can see. Come, or you could always come to the net one of them.
Okay, when you're
So we do it and we'll do one the last Thursday in March.
Okay, March. Yeah, okay. I might be doing rehearsals, but yeah, let me know if I can come. I will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every one there Right. So that's the deal. If you're there, you're part of the jam.
Oh, okay.
So if you came, you'd be part of the jam. You'd be part of the jam. Right. Right.
Right. The band's got a CD and a DVD.
Yeah, that's the deal with it. In addition to being on television, mm-hmm. they get a CD and a DVD of their part of the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Have you gotten a nice response from the show being played? Is it started? Is it running yet?
It just started. It's been about 5 weeks.
Uh huh.
I don't know. Have we gotten any feedback yet from the show? I can't even remember.
Yeah, I love that it doesn't matter. You know, it's about doing the stuff. Yeah. I'm always surprised when people are listening. I was doing my I do these two morning shows, and getting up early in the morning is hard for me. I'm kind of become more of a night person. Yeah. So now I have to be at the studio to do this 8 to 10 show. Mm. And we're so punchy, you know, but it's funny, and because we're half asleep, but it's just kind of hard. But then so my Friday afternoon show, which is just music, and I go in there by myself, and it's so fun because I just like put on headphones and like listen to like, you know, music that I love and talk about it and put it out there. It's hard to imagine anyone's out there listening so much of the time. And then it's such a joy when you find out that someone is and you get a call and, you know, someone is moved by what you've done. And it just sort of makes your whole 5 weeks of work, you know, worthwhile.
That one call.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We've been getting great response for our morning show, though, which has been a crack up. You know, it's been nice to get, you know, from like taxi driver friends and stuff who are like, I listen to your show all the time. And you're like, really? So we started out as a call and advice show, but no one ever calls. So it's kind of now it's like the standing joke that we're like the call and advice show without any call-ins. Yeah, so once in a while someone calls. Maybe once a show.
Every D I D DJ. Every DJ. Once. Oh, the numbers. Yeah, I mean, that's always been the case. They'll want to know what the numbers are.
Oh, yeah.
Won't give them
of
out.
How many people will have downloaded
okay, maybe
or
that's
listening.
Not it. Once, two, do, a, C, a.
A call.
Oh, there's been a lot of DJs that want to do call-in shows.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to generate the people to do it.
Yeah.
We started, we seed the clouds, you know, like we send out, you know, we'll call like our brothers, you know, and sisters and dads. Or call
plants.
In.
We call them plants.
Plants. We do plants sometimes. Yeah. But then sometimes people call out of the blue.
When? Frank's been a guest on this one DJ's show on KPFA for, you know, maybe the last 20 so years, just about once a year at least. And whenever we're the guest, we get a lot of phone calls.
Oh, that's nice.
And she always says she loves having us on because we get so many phone calls on in reality. A number of them are plants with different voices, you know, different characters. And, you know, sure, it gets other people to call in. It works.
It does. You know, you want to create this thing that people want to join.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like you sound like you're having fun and want to be a part of it.
We've never actually told her that, although it seems obvious to us. I think she likes thinking that, you know, they're all real callers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's nice to not care about it. Like to be like, it seems like you guys, you do what you do because it's about the doing of it, which is,
Don't write. I don't tell. You don't tell. Stats. Mm-hmm. Like that's the other thing. We don't tell people stats.
Yeah.
Because we don't, you know, that's what Frank's thing has always been. Just do the show because you want to do the show.
Yeah.
Because of how many people are listening.
Yeah. That's what Monkey, who does the Pirate Cat Station, you know, he's like, we're not doing this we're not doing this to be famous.
Right.
You know, each of us, we're a collective and we do this together. This is about the good of the station, and you know, let's try to, like, part of our thing is that the way that we're able to broadcast is, I mean, we're not really able to broadcast, but what we're standing on is saying that there's a clause in this wartime act that says during wartime citizens are allowed to remain in communication with each other over the airwaves. They've yet to challenge us in court about it. And so they let us keep continuing, but the FCC keeps finding our transmitter and citing that. Mm. It's been cited more than like 250 times or something like that.
Do you have to keep moving around?
We move it around, but because people get annoyed with having the FCC just citing them, even though it's not got anything to do with them. Yeah. And I don't know why they don't just come to the station. I mean, we're not that hard to find, really.
The station around. We just move the transmitter.
Yeah, we just move the transmitter and then we broadcast it. And so we have live transmitters, or they were broadcast out in San Francisco, in L.A., and then in Gerlach, Nevada, where Burning Man takes place out there. And then, then over the internet. And so a lot of people listen on the internet. But the FCC is concerned about the live broadcasting. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting that they, at some point, it'll come to a head, you know. Because and the more media attention that we get, the more likely it'll come to a head. So we had this piece about the station in Playboy a couple of months ago, and then we just got blasted with listeners and people on the websites, and then we got calls from Variety and Rolling Stone magazine, and they flew, you know, the guy out there. So there's supposed to be something coming out in Rolling Stone in the next couple months. So it's very fun. It's very fun.
How
to, you know.
A about the S-H-A are sharks, like the ASCAP and CSAC and all that, have they approached you to pay royalties for the music?
No.
Yeah, the first publicity we got, we got hit up by them.
Yeah.
First time.
Yeah.
We were voted like best of or something. Boom, within a week, we had a bill.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how we get around that. No idea. Maybe it's because, I don't know. Even if you're, I wonder if that would go with being licensed, because we're not licensed, we don't have to pay, or I don't know, you're not licensed.
We're not licensed.
Did you have to pay it?
We do pay it. That's the only expense, really.
And how much is that? Is it very much?
Per year?
$750,
$800 a year. Yeah, but I mean, we pay it.
And that's
it.
For the music.
We pay it. You know, we don't have
that.
Any
yeah.
income. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's like we're the ones that are paying it. We don't, like, generate any money from the station or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
ours
it seemed
doesn't
like
either, yeah.
The thing that was really, they in addition to asking us for money, the first one, BMI, they wanted us to also list every song we play at precisely the time it's played, who sang it, like the label it was on, and how many people are listening. And we got away with not doing that for, like, the whole time until recently we started doing
and
it.
And you still have to do it. Wow.
Frank would say, hey, I'm typing this with a pointer on my head. And it's my station. If you can tell me how I can do this, I'll do it. And then they'd leave us alone for a really long time until a new person would, like, take over. And then they'd say, you know, the same letter, and he'd write back the same thing. And that's how we managed to get through the 8 years.
It's your meal ticket.
Right.
It worked
exactly.
With what you got. Yeah. Oh, that's fun. It's fun to keep, I don't know, to create your own bubble and keep doing the stuff that you want. It sounds like you do a million things.
Yeah, we do.
And do you like to work at night because it's quieter and there's not the hubbub of life, or?
Well, we actually just kept drifting to that. Like, it wasn't, because Mikey does graphic design and he works at home. And So we very didn't have anything tonight that was forcing us to get up at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And we noticed that we just would drift to that. Mm-hmm. And we would, for a long time, we would think that we should try to be awake during the day, and we would keep trying to do that. And at a certain point, we realized there's nothing wrong with being up at night.
Oh my God, my boyfriend would love you. Like we always, you know, I'm always like, it's sunny today. Look at the girl. He's like, her.
Well, yeah, I definitely like to be up for part of the day.
Yeah.
I like to have sun.
But my life, now that my daughter's grown up, I'm like inching more. She was the only thing that ever got me up, right, like at 7 in the morning and like to school for 14 years. I'm like, I'm done. Yeah.
Well, the way it works is we're usually up by, you know, at the latest 3 o'clock.
Or, yeah.
Or Mikey and I,
then what time
anyway.
Do you go to bed at?
It varies, but I mean, it really varies. The latest we've ever gone to bed is like noon.
Yeah.
But it's usually, what? Was one the latest?
Yeah.
But it's usually more like, you know, right around sunrise or, you know, 6, 7,
yeah,
8, something around in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you'll get up at 3 or something.
Yeah. Oh, Mikey and I get up a little before Frank so that we can do any, like, daytime things.
You know,
phone calls, errands, things that require you to interact with the 9-to-5 world.
Yeah, I've kind of creeped up like more like that. I'm so more of the
L.
2 to 10 sleeper.
P, 2 to 10. P-E, people. P, yeah, what we found is people freak out over that. Like
exactly.
Over that, like they won't freak out over the eroticism, the nudity, the art that we do. But when we tell them we stay up all night, it's like they're really upset. You know?
It does. It shifts things on their head. I do. I kind of go, you know, to battle with my boyfriend. It's just like, come to bed, you know. Like we have to make deals for him to come to come to bed sometimes with me, because he, with what he does, he describes it as he has all these plates in the air, you know, and it's design stuff and it's like multi-layered, and that if you get interrupted, you drop all the plates and then you have to get them all like spinning again, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just at nighttime, it's peaceful. You have this open end of time. The phone isn't ringing. Right. Someone's not knocking at your door. And
yeah. R-L-E-S less V I vibes.
Yeah.
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 It's not that daytime vibration of everybody. Cool.
Yeah.
But it's just,
I think we live with roommates now, so, and that's kind of a new thing for me. So the last couple of years, and never did, with my daughter, it was just she and I was like very careful to kind of keep control over the environment. But now I'm living like an 18-year-old. But it's pretty interesting to deal with people that much, and they're good people, but it's it's sometimes staying up at night, like they go to sleep early and then my boyfriend and I will sleep up late, so we have these kind of like shifted schedules, and it's nice to have that you know, open-ended, without, because they don't work like my boyfriend and I do. Like they're not doing like things where everything they do has to be generated by them. Like with me, everything I do, everything I make money at, everything I do creatively, I have to make. I have to first, you know, it all comes from there. And those kind, you need that chunk of time to stare into space, even though it's like I'm working. It doesn't look like I'm working, but I'm working. So when somebody comes in and thinks you're not doing anything and then wants to ask you a favor because you're like, you're just sitting there, you know, in the middle of the day, you know, it's like, no, I'm working.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to explain if people don't have that same understanding of generating their own life, you know. You know, just like, maybe it's easy. I used to sometimes have envy of, you know, the people with jobs that just go to work and someone tells them.
And then
them
when
what
they come home, they're home, and they have
home.
It's like all like, watching TV and
Do you guys ever watch TV? Or do you?
We get Netflix. And so when we eat, we watch movies.
Uh-huh.
And so it will take us like a few meals to get through a movie usually.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do that too. Movie watchers.
Yeah.
That's good. Although I can't do it when I'm writing. Or I have this job or that pays my rent, or I write horoscopes.
Oh, wow.
But they're complete crap. Like,
oh,
I make them up.
Ooh, I always wondered if the people
know,
who did that.
It's such a disappointment. I hate to break it, but it's total crap. No, other people's, I think, are more.
T. Nasty. H. Horoscopes.
Actually, they're... I read some on my radio show, and I call them the crack horoscopes. But
where are they?
They're
where
on,
do they appear?
Oh, kitty. They're on a website, astrology.com, and they have all these like real horoscopes, and then they have these specialized ones, and mine are called Astro Slams. So they're hired. They're mean and funny. Like, so they're just completely negative and funny, and it's kind of. But I have to write so many of them. They're daily ones.
Oh,
and
whoa.
So I write like 370 of them a month. So I take this one week out of the month. I'm already like days late on my delivery date, but I'm just like, I get to the end. I've got like 2 months, you know, like 60 or more of them. And I'm like, it's kind of a weird space to be in.
Yeah.
But it's kind of been good in a way because it's like writing jokes, you know. And I have to, I'm not basing them the first... Like several months, I based them on these moon charts and transitions and keywords they gave me. And each month they were getting progressively worse. And I was going to get fired. Like they sent me like emails like 3 times saying these need to be meaner. They need to be funnier. And finally I was like, okay, I've been warned 3 times. I know what that means. I'm going to get fired. So I threw out all of the prompts that they gave me. And I have never told them, but I don't look at any of that stuff. And so when I write them, I just make up, you know, I just sort of like, we'll go to different places and everything in a room will incorporate itself into a, you know, someone walks in the room and says something that'll end up in a horoscope. And it's kind of a fun, like rapid fire writing exercise, but it's kind of a draining way to make a living. But that's all I have to do is that one week. And then I'm, you know, and I do some other things for a living, but it's, you know, it gives me time to write plays or books and do radio shows and all those things that are fun that no one pays you for. I mean, I get paid for books, but not very much. $10,000 for 4 years worth of work.
C R I Crip. Being a Crip. O O P pays. Right, that's the other convenient thing, because, you know, Frank gets money for being a Crip, and then we get paid.
Oh, I was thinking gangs already.
Oh,
see,
Crip.
See, clearly I don't see you as, you know,
a Crip.
Cripple anymore.
Right,
you
so
get
he
money.
Gets paid for being disabled, and his medical bills are paid, and then he gets paid to have someone take care of him, so that's Mikey and I getting money for that, and then we get our medical insurance.
You're a whole cottage industry.
Yeah.
And then you get what?
We get medical insurance really cheap for being attendants.
Wow.
So it's really, I mean, it's not enough to live on. Mikey works as a graphic designer, but it's a base.
Can I take this? I've got somebody who I think this is like the fifth time she's called. Hey, Zinzi. Good. Can I call you back in a few minutes? I'm just doing this radio show right now.
You are live.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me call you right back. Okay. Bye.
Immortalized.
Yeah. She's my friend. She was named by Nelson Mandela.
She was named by Nelson.
Yeah. She grew up. Her parents were South African freedom fighters and were jailed and taken away in the middle of a crazy upbringing. But she had, you know... people like Nelson Mandela sitting around her dinner table. Interesting. Like right at that crux moment when things were shifting in the 80s. Really interesting. Yeah. So we just had our little Zinzi energy.
L-U. Lover. May be in on. Oh, we just got contacted by somebody who wants to make Lover available for people to listen to on their cell phones.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. I guess it's big in Europe and the United Kingdom. And so now they're based in Germany, but now they've opened up an office in Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
And he discovered us. And Frank's response was, "We are radically non-commercial," you know, end of conversation. And the guy said, "Well, we're not, but... you know, we could do it. We could do it so that there'd be no commercials."
You know?
And so now he's kind of given us the rap about how it would work. It doesn't cost anything. It's just like they want to offer us. Yeah, and it doesn't cost people to listen, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
So, you know, he said all the right things to Frank. You know, he's looking for stations with passion and, you know, that stand for something. And so.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, be fun. May, maybe, your S-T.
Station?
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be good. There was an offer to buy us out by Sirius or XM or something like that. And we kind of had this 6-month audition. And... you know, where we all kind of have whipped our shows into shape. And it was actually great for the station because people got a lot more professional and, like, really stepped things up. And in the end, you know, the offer just wasn't enough. But Monkey's attitude was that kind of sellout. He's like, "No, we're not selling out. I'm selling out."
But they just didn't offer him enough?
And if you're lucky, you can come with me.
But they didn't offer him enough.
And they didn't offer him enough. No, he's just like, "Forget it. I don't." But his plan all along was to sell him it and then start a new station.
Him?
I don't know.
How much is
not
how
enough?
Much is, how much is enough?
Or, I don't know. And that was kind of what he came. You know, he's just like, "That's not what this is. This is about." You know, I think because he's so young too. He's still, you know, and he's kind of got one foot in the corporate world. It was great for a while. He was working at Clear Channel while he was running Pirate Cat.
B for I don't. I want. Him on.
Yeah, he
on
should
this
be on the show.
You
should definitely have him on the show. Yeah. I'll tell him. Yeah, I'll give you his email. He's hard to get a hold of, but he's a good one. It's fun. Pretty boy.
Like me. A pretty boy.
Exactly. He's a lot like you.
How so?
Oh, you're both passionate. No, he's got a ways to go to be like you. It's another 40 years of, you know, life, or I don't know.
How does he have a ways to go?
Oh, he's just, he's a different kind of spirit than you are. Yeah. He's adversarial. But I can't say things about bad things about Monkey on the radio show. I love Monkey. But you're different. Yeah. But he's a... You ask hard questions. Who thought that pointing to that would be hard to answer?
He uses that a lot.
I know.
How?
What?
Why?
Yeah, well, it stops and makes you think, you know. Yeah. Actually, what it makes you do is it makes you stop and think where the stuff did come from, and then you start editing. You know, of like, yeah, that was a totally true statement, but I don't really want to tell you why.
S. So. Why?
So why? So why? Well, why? No, why wouldn't I answer?
How?
How
do you S C. Mm-hmm. How do you see me? L E A. Leave. Leave him out of it.
How do I see you? I see you as one of the last great eccentrics.
That is a Q U O quote. One of the last great eccentrics. How so?
I just think that it's really, there are not many people in the world that are able to decide to create their own world and live in that world and bring people in and still engage with the outside world. It's not like you're a hermit on a hilltop.
No.
You've created the world. I think that people, that's the best example you can give to people, because for whatever reason, people have a hard time doing that, you know, and they get caught up in how they're being judged. And I think that actually the way that you came to this earth put you at an advantage for doing that.
Yes.
You know, because you came out at the starting gate having to get over that stuff right away that people don't get over until they're 40 years old in this country, you know, and like everybody's so worried about what people think of them. And, you know, at some point you have to kind of embrace, you know, who you are. So that's what I see. Yeah. So monkey doesn't have any of that mileage. Yeah, yet. But not many people do. I mean, to have a lifetime of that, I'm sure would make, you know.
I am L. Lucky.
That's a great thing to feel. I feel lucky. I feel very lucky. Wow. That's good.
G M O. We one of the things that we were involved in is one of our, you know, kind of extended family works at the neighborhood natural grocery company store. And as people that shop there and being aware of the genetically modified stuff going on, and we eat organic, we would wonder, you know, we realized at a certain point we were assuming, because it was a natural grocery store, that there were no genetically modified things. And then we found out that that wasn't even like a standard being applied to the buyer's kind of palate. And so through that, we got started an organization or a movement or something that was based at the grocery store, based by our person, but through, you know, got the boss kind of went along with it. And K, I kicked. Kicking and screaming. But, you know, Frank pretty much orchestrated the whole thing through through the person that worked there, our person that worked there. And the boss, right, kicking and screaming every step of the way. So our guy's doing, like, all the work, and finally he gets it, so they'll give him, like, a certain period amount of time each day at work or once a week, and then it got bigger. But then at a certain point, and we're really like getting somewhere where we're actually coming up with like a standard, and people in Canada are jumping on with us, and we had all these grocery stores that were part of it. And
so your movement was to create a standard for the...
Right, we hooked up with a science, you know, a tech organization that helped us create the standard. And the science, you could only say something was, what was it, 0.1% P... Oh, 0.01% Like, you can't say something is 0% that it's free 100% of genetically modified organisms. That's what, like, the scientific thing is.
Yeah.
And so we came up with the lowest number you could say. And that's the standard. So what happened is that all of the big boys, as we got more well-known, 800, how many stores? How many stores were signed up?
There was about 400.
400 Whoa, stores fantastic. Signed up in the United States and Canada. You always exaggerate numbers. Mikey was working on their website. That's why he knows all this stuff. And but it started picking up steam, and then you have people like Whole Foods who were doing their own in-house thing. We're getting a lot of publicity, and so they start showing up at the door wanting to be involved and thinking
0.1%.
300
stores.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Okay, so they want to get involved, and all of a sudden there's all these like big guys showing up, and they basically, and Frank is still the guy orchestrating all of it, like behind the curtain. Like nobody knows about Frank, even though actually the woman who represented the scientific company came on the show when she was in town.
Oh, cool.
And Frank told her off air that he was the guy, like, you know, behind the curtain. And, you know, I think she just had a hard time really accepting that that was true.
Yeah.
And so what happened is that we were the ones that, you know, Frank each step of the way would say, like at one point these big guys are saying, you need to have a board of advisors and they need to be like the big people in the industry. So it will look like you're involved and it will make people want to be involved because they're like, you know, you're connected. Frank said, no, that's a headache. It's going to be problems.
That sounds
no
like a lot
board of
work.
Advisor. And, you know, and so that was a big fight. That was a big tussle. And it just kept being things like that. And then it was like, well, let's do a presentation at this big expo to announce it. All right, fine. So set it up. Well, no, these big guys say they'll set it up for us. And then they can offer some of their people to speak. Well, in the end, the big guys set it up but never named the project anywhere. And they give our person the last 10 minutes of the presentation.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is like a big battle. Like no, and us like bringing it up is like a big deal. The F-I first R-E-A-L real B A T battle. It was really the first real battle, and everybody but us was willing to just cave in.
Wow.
And say, okay. And we pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and you know, you're up
get in there and actually control the standard and everything.
Well, see, this is the way it works. It's like everything is kind of swarmy. It's like nobody ever like will admit that they left out the name and are giving the person the last 10 minutes on purpose. It's always like, oh, yeah, it was the person who did the website.
Yeah.
I'll email
it's terrible.
Them.
Yeah. Terrible oversight. I'll talk.
Oh, yeah. We'll let your person speak, but then they never change the schedule. And then when you say, well, when are you changing the schedule? Well, it turns out they have no intention of doing it. But you only find this out if you kind of act unreasonable.
If you just
ask something that they already said they were going to do, it turns out they have no intention of doing it. But then you're like being unreasonable by making a big deal out of it. Then they are reveal, right? They reveal S T R A I straight out that they want the control. That's only because we're pushing that they're admitting that.
Yeah.
But they'll only admit that to our guy and then they start calling around him because he's been the one doing all the work for years. He's like the only person doing all the work, you know. But then when there's like newspaper articles, it's the boss that is quoted and gets his picture and stuff, which is fine because that's not what it's about for us. But then they start going around him and saying, you know, there's some personality issues. And they won't say the same thing they're saying to him, you know, even though we're like saying to them, this is what they said. Well, I didn't hear that.
Oh, anytime you get people involved in anything, Uh-huh. You know, you get,
exactly.
You get all that stuff.
Yeah. So in the end, Frank said, we're going to walk.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I don't see any hope for it. Yeah. And now already they've changed it. They're changing everything. This all happened within a week. And already it's completely like whitewashed. It's, yeah, so it's going to be just like a non-standard.
Wow.
Yeah.
I get vegetables from this farm. It's a CSA.
That's what we do too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, it's great. It's this place up in Covelo, and the food is so good. You can tell such a difference. It's biodynamic, so it's like sort of planted by the phases of the moon with, you know, this kind of, it's very sort of this magical element to it that Rudolf Steiner was a philosopher from the 30s who kind of started the Waldorf schools, and all, he had teachings on everything, so all this stuff is sort of planted by his teachings too, and there's no they work the fields with horses, and there's no fuel that they use. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really fun. You never know what you're going to get, you know. So it's great. You get these boxes.
You learn to cook other things.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now we have to learn how to make rutabagas.
Yeah. Rutabagas are great with potatoes.
That's what
mashed
we like,
potatoes.
Too. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And turnips or parsnips. Good. And turnips. Yeah.
Would you do... two drops for us?
Sure.
That's the one. Are we going to do this on air? You want to do it on air? Okay. So we still have a few minutes. Okay. So one of them is for Frank's show. Frank has a show on Lover.
Okay.
Recently. It's called Frank Spins Hot Wax.
Ah, very good.
And so you would, you know, in both of them, you identify who you are.
Okay.
And you can, you know, say the radio station or however you, that you DJ
on.
Okay,
should I be,
whatever you want to do, really.
I could be,
Or you could do a drop for each thing. Like different.
Okay. I could do the... It's funny with the different names and all, you know, like, is it DJ Pixie? Is it Pamela? Is it,
Well, you could do, could she do drops as Pamela and as DJ Pixie? Yes.
Okay.
If you want
I'll
to.
I'll do, yeah.
Yeah. And so you want to just start with that? So, it, and you would be saying you're listening to Frank Spins Hot Wax on Lover.com.
Okay. And so I say this is DJ Pixie from Pirate Cat Radio.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This is DJ Pixie from Pixie's Bordello on Pirate Cat Radio, listening to Frank's Spins Hot Wax. So let me do that again. And you say you're listening to Frank Spins Hot Wax. Okay. This is DJ Pixie from Pirate Cat Radio. And let me try it over
again. We use the bloopers.
Gosh. This is DJ Pixie from Pixie's Bordello at Pirate Cat Radio, and you're listening to Frank Spins Hot Wax on Lover Radio. Is that? Was that it? Oh, look at that big cat.
And then do you want to, there's another show we want you to promo too, which is The Mix.
Okay.
So you're listening to The Mix on Lover.com.
Okay. I'll do, This is DJ Pixie from Pixie's... Oh, wait, no, sorry. I'd have to get my other show. This is DJ Pixie from Suspect Advice on Pirate Cat Radio, and you're listening to...
The Mix.
The Mix on Lover.com. Yeah?
Yeah.
I have a short attention and brain, memory span.
Tell me about it.
Wait.
Got to write everything down.
I know. I think it's the sort of like perimenopause, you know. Waking up drenched in sweat and then forgetting everything.
Can Lover have P I Pixies radio shows to play on Lover?
Yeah, I bet you could. You know what I'll do? I'll send you, I'll talk to Monkey about it, but I'll send you.
Do you tape your shows?
Yeah, I have podcasts of all of them.
Oh, and they're up on the website?
They're up on the website.
Well, so, that's all. We can deal with the rest. We can deal with
I'll
the technical
check and
stuff.
Make sure. But I would love it if we did the morning show even, because that one is, it's well,
that's
you know
good.
What? You
yeah,
could
he's
listen,
for that.
Listen to both of them, but you could, the morning show is more lively, and I play a lot of the same music I do on my regular music show, but there's a lot of funny stuff in there. My friend came out with this thing the other day who I do the show with, and she's like, okay, well, we're going to chant the headlines, and does this whole thing. She's like, okay, everybody, close your eyes, cross your legs, doesn't matter if you're driving. Okay, everybody, she's like, oops. Abu Ghraib, Pantang Plutonium. So it was just, it's very, very silly. But in a good way, it's I think that there needs to be like a female alternative to that icky, shock, jock, rude, sort of sexual, icky content, like the Howard Stern kind of, degrading female stuff.
Yeah.
So I sort of like that it's like two grown women with kids that are still alive and able to laugh at stuff, At first we were a little tentative, like she kind of didn't want to, talk about being a kid, mom and stuff. And I was just like, you drive a minivan and you have two 16-year-old boys and a 9-year-old girl. That's a huge part of your life. It's great to incorporate that. It's the same thing of like sort of getting people to look at things outside of what's expected. Yeah. That this is how you're supposed to be if you do this. And if you step out of there,
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody really fits into those boxes. It's just other people torment themselves for longer by trying.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
You want to say anything about
thanks.
Your
This is a URLs big honor. Thank you for having me. It's a big cultural honor. I don't know why you called me, and I'm really glad you did. So thank you. So hopefully I'll come back or do something with you guys.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, I guess I should get back to Bart, huh?
Yeah. Oh, we can give you a ride to Bart.
Oh,
okay,
really?
I guess that's a wrap. Yeah. Night.